Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Live from the University of Minnesota, you are listening to Radio Case Culture Q, the Twin Cities arts and cultural program providing you the stories of Minnesota that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matthew Curtis, and thank you so much for joining us. This week, we're all about conclusions. This isn't the last episode of Culture Q or anything, at least I hope not. We're just starting to finish what we started this summer. Aaron Bolton wraps up his historical account of Minneapolis hip-hop, Katie Bullen pulls the brakes on his series on biking in the Twin Cities, and Parker Lemke takes a bow at the Fridley Theatre. And it starts right now on Radio Case Culture Q. What does it take to transform a car-centric city into a bike-friendly metro? In the last part of a three-part series on bike culture in the Twin Cities, producer Katie Bolin explores the years of planning it took to make Minneapolis one of the best biking cities in America. We'll join her for an interview after the story, and in case you missed the first parts of her biking series, you can check them out on RadioK.org.
Anytime you have mayoral support or local support, kind of some skin in the game or interest in getting something like this done, it's definitely going to help.
That's Anthony Ongaro. He's the marketing director at Nice Ride Minnesota.
It was kind of a series of events that started out with the former mayor of Minneapolis, R.T. Ryback, having a trip to Paris where he tried the bike share system there. And it was kind of a result of that trip and then speaking with my now boss, who is Bill Dossett, the executive director of Nice Ride.
Together back in 2008 and 2009, RT and Bill worked together to find funding for a Twin Cities bike share program. They eventually received a grant through the Department of Transportation that was matched here locally.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield's Center for Prevention is essentially the area that helped fund and continues to sponsor Nice Ride. So it's the, you may be familiar with the tobacco settlement or the lawsuit that occurred.
He's talking about the 1994 lawsuit that Blue Cross and Blue Shield filed against the tobacco industry. Blue Cross won the suit that led to changes in how tobacco was marketed in Minnesota.
Come to where the flavor is. Come to Marlboro Country.
The lawsuit also influenced new restrictions in 46 other states, and Blue Cross eventually received a multi-million dollar settlement in 2006.
Those funds actually are what helped create the Center for Prevention, and it's those dollars from essentially the anti-smoking lobby that helped fund Nice Ride and still currently does.
I think bike sharing like Nice Ride has really opened up bicycling to people who weren't using it.
That's City Council Member Lisa Bender.
I think of Nice Ride as an extension of our public transportation system. So people who use transit or who walk and then bike are able to have that option. I think it's such an incredible program, and it's really, really helped build public support and awareness for bicycling.
Having been freshly elected last November to represent Ward 10 of Minneapolis, one of Lisa's top priorities in her first term is to promote wider bicycle use throughout the city.
I'm really passionate about extending our amazing trail system to create more protected bikeways on city streets. And so the city is working on a update to our bike master plan to look for places where we think protected bikeways would make the most sense, with the goal of building 30 miles of protected bike lanes. And these will be lanes that are separated from traffic either by a curb or by paint and bollards or planters or other physical barriers that will create a safe and separate place for people to ride their bicycles. This is really important for people who don't feel comfortable riding in traffic.
It might seem simple. A few paint strokes on busy streets and you've got a bike-friendly road. But what about all the cars?
Whenever you're taking away space from cars, whether it be car parking or traffic lanes, there's often concern from people who drive, especially people who drive as their primary mode of transportation, about traffic. And so I think there's just always some outreach and education and listening to do about the trade-offs of changing streets. often bicycle facilities, if done well, will make it the street better for everybody, including people who drive.
Converting a city from car-centric roads to shared spaces is something Lisa has been working on with local officials for years.
As an advocate, before I ran for office, I was involved with others in pushing the city to see reconstruction and resurfacing projects as an opportunity to implement bike facilities. And often, bike lanes are just paint, or even if we're putting in protected bike lanes, they're relatively inexpensive improvements. And so we've been successful in making it so that when the city is doing maintenance projects, you know, our regular scheduled construction or maintenance projects on a road, that we see it as an opportunity to put in a bike facility. And so that's been a great way to build out our bike system at relatively little cost.
Although creating more bike lanes and bike paths across Minneapolis and St. Paul gives citizens more options when it comes to transportation, there is one other benefit that will impact generations of Minnesotans to come.
Anytime you're moving more than you would be sitting in a car driving to work or commuting or just on your lunch break, you're going to improve your cardiovascular health and just get healthy overall. It's just a resource that is really helping people make those healthier choices.
Lisa Bender.
It's getting harder and harder for adults to get the exercise and activity they need to stay healthy. And so if we're able to make it easy for people to bicycle or walk to, you know, things that they would already be doing, it's a great way to support health. And I think especially for kids, if we're able to help make those habits early on, you know, biking and walking are things you can do throughout your lifetime.
Aside from the transit and health benefits resulting from a local government's mission to build a bike-friendly city, there are economic perks as well.
Our friendliness to bicycling is one of our great selling points as a region. And, you know, that having Nice Ride available for people to bicycle while they're visiting is a great way to highlight that. So I think we should always continue to build on our bicycle tourism, both here in the Twin Cities, in the more urban areas, but as well as, you know, throughout the state.
A forward-thinking mayor's trip to Paris and passionate citizens turned city council members like Lisa Bender both contributed in different ways to help build up the Twin Cities as one of the best biking spots in America. There's a lot of work, cooperation, and dedication that goes into creating a bike-friendly city, and a lot of community good that seems to come out of it. For Culture Q, I'm Katie Bolin.
Live in the studio, we have here Katie Bolin. How are you doing, Katie?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, actually.
Good.
It's been a good day so far. So you just finished up your series on biking. How are you feeling about it?
I feel really good, and that was the most interesting part of the series for me because I got to learn about the behind the scenes of everything that people like Lisa Bender and RT Ryback and Nice Ride have been working on for years to get our city where it is in terms of biking.
And do you personally bike a lot?
I bike recreationally. I'll go to Lake Harriet and to get lunch and stuff, but I work at least 20 minutes from every one of my jobs, so that's a little rough.
Yeah. So I assume you're driving. Do the bike lanes like have some kind of impact on you, do you feel?
I like that they're there. I'm really happy that there are people stronger than me that can bike across the city. But yeah, I think they're really great. I hate driving. I wish I could bike more, but you know, maybe someday when I'm stronger.
I appreciate that. So Minneapolis is known as a biking city. What do you think that actually does for us? Like, why is that a good thing for us to be putting on the map?
It gives people a lot of healthy independence. You know, it's really great to not be stuck in traffic when you're on a bike. And it's healthy for you. It's just good. It's good for everyone. It's hard in the winter. And that was something that I couldn't fit into my story was I asked the Nice Ride people if they were going to work on a winter session because they take all of their bikes away in the winter, and they said New York City and Chicago, I think, both did pilot programs, but they weren't that successful. It's hard to bike in the winter, but I know a lot of people that do bike year-round here.
I mean, like, for some people, it's just a pure necessity. Like, it's they like the
that's their transportation.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, for business as well, like as you discussed in your previous story.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's I'm pretty happy with the bike lanes. It's
definitely
beneficial for me. It's kind of scary to bike though.
Yeah, sometimes it is scary with the cars and the cars that do not, they're not used to you being there, which is kind of strange still because bikers have been a presence on city roads here for years.
Yeah.
But it just takes time. Everything takes time.
Yeah, I respect that. Do you feel like we're going to expand on the bike culture within the Twin Cities even now?
Yeah, there's bikers everywhere. I was just out with my parents today and they live in Rochester and they're just amazed that there's so many people out on trails and they're on the roads. There's just so many trails and everything. That's everything anybody said over my three stories was there is so much here for biking.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're expanding it. So it's good.
Thank you very much, Katie.
You're welcome.
In the final installment of Hip Hop History, music reporter for Culture Q, Aaron Bolton wraps up this three-part series by looking at the Twin Cities hip hop link to Chicago and where the scene currently stands after decades of exciting development. If you missed the first two parts, you can find them on Radio K's Culture Q page on RadioK.org.
By the late 90s and early 2000s, Twin Cities hip-hop made a few leaps outside of the state, but had not been able to take root or sustain any notoriety in any of these places. While the Soundset and Headspin events were taking place in the Twin Cities, it was time travel radio show host Kevin Beecham that was catching on to the movement in the Twin Cities. It would also be Beecham who helped Twin Cities hip-hop take root in Chicago. In the summer of 97, Beecham and his co-host Jay Pratt were on a trip out in New York for a big event called the Rocksteady Crew Anniversary. After being handed tapes and CDs throughout the whole event, both Beecham and Jay Pratt returned home to start sorting through the tapes.
A lot of them just weren't good, and we're just going through all like, oh, this is bad, this is okay. And he was like, I got one CD that's really good.
That one really good CD happened to be Atmosphere's Overcast.
It probably played for like 20 seconds. I was like, what is this?
Beecham was excited by the CD and immediately called the number on the back to obtain a copy to play on time travel. As he began spinning the record, Chicago also shared his excitement. This strong response allowed Beecham to help organize show swaps between Atmosphere and a local Chicago group known as Rubber Room.
Minneapolis is a close enough city where we should be hitting with Rubber Room and other groups from Chicago. Let's get them out here to Chicago and see if they'll bring us out to Minneapolis, and that worked out fine. There was interest on both sides, and that was sort of the catalyst of them really like building up that Chicago market, one of the first markets outside Twin Cities that was a big market for them.
Beecham became acquainted with the scene from a Chicago standpoint and eventually moved here to work for Rhymesayers in 2002. It was during this time of his arrival that the Twin Cities hip-hop scene was cooking up its next big event. This event had no special name. It was simply known as the Loring Pasta Bar Battles.
When I moved here right around the time, they had been doing it for a while, but the Loring Pasta Bar Nights. They did these nights, DJ nights, and then got popular for the rap battles. And I would go there every Monday night when I moved here, pretty much.
Local DJ Trey Martin, or That Dude Trey, also remembers attending the battles and explains what started making this particular event stem outside of the scene into the mainstream.
And the reason it actually got big, believe it or not, is right around that time 8 Mile came out.
Big Zach was hosting this weekly event and says in the beginning, the space was hard to fill. The large space took at least 100 people just to make it not look empty. He also credits 8 Mile for the event's popularity. People filled the large space and MCs were lining up for their shot to battle.
After 8 Mile came out, like 700 people come in to see him. 60 plus rappers are signing up for the battle every night. And we're trying to cut it down to 32 and it's just a madhouse in there.
The Loring Pasta Bar Battles came to a close in 2003. This would be the last big event for a few years. In the meantime, both Big Zach and Taylor were throwing some big shows in some unconventional spaces.
And so me and Zach started throwing these huge, huge warehouse parties.
Throughout these warehouse shows, Taylor and Big Zach booked a variety of DJs.
And we had Kevin Beecham, DJ Fundo, my sister, Propaganja, Plain Old Bill.
In the years 2000 to 2004, these events were not all that was happening in the Twin Cities hip-hop scene. There was a group of MCs fresh out of high school that were about to make a name for themselves. This group is a name that you should know today, and that name is Doomtree.
They tie hip-hop in with different flavor, for just lack of better words, the really rock sound.
Doomtree members were not completely reliant on the group, and all members have maintained some impressive solo careers outside of Doomtree.
I was at a show, maybe the Caboose, I believe it was, and I saw Cecil Otter. And it was just something about his unique stage presence, and I can't to this day explain what it was. I don't know, he just had a unique presence to him. And I really liked his writing. So he was the first guy outside of Rhymesayers that I was like, I really, really like this guy. So I would, anytime I saw him on a flyer, I would go to a show.
POS would come around Headspin, but I guess he was really quiet, and Zach kind of informed me in that. I had him perform at Mazelax. I just liked that he was different, and it was fresh, and since I was older, it kind of reminded me of Anthrax.
Cecil and POS are just the surface of the seven-member powerhouse. The group made its first big move in 2005 by starting their annual winter event, the Doomtree Blowout. This special multi-show event sells out First Ave every night and to this day continues to grow. Doomtree and its members are arguably the biggest group to form in the 2000s. While their careers were taking off, other groups and MCs were growing their reach in Chicago and beyond. The 2000s slowly formed into what we see and hear today.
Flavor and style seems to have slipped away, you know, by the wayside somewhere. What I will say, you know, on a positive is that there are a lot more talented MCs. It's hard to find just a whack MC anymore.
I just feel like this scene can be really embracing of the people and supportive. I definitely feel like that was stronger when I moved here, and maybe some of that has gotten lost. It's still better than a lot of places I've been to. I hope that doesn't get lost.
Today's hip-hop, I'm really feeling them Atlas. Lizzo is really doing great things, but out of the youngers, I'm definitely feeling what Greg Greese and Just Nine are doing.
Twin Cities hip-hop has spanned 33 years, starting back in the 80s with parties and DJs to Twin Cities hip-hop groups and artists embarking on national and international tours. In this series, we have pulled some information out that has been swept under the rug. Twin Cities hip-hop can't know where it's going if it doesn't know where it's been. For Culture Q, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Every week, Radio K selects one album to highlight, and this week we have selected Easy Pain by Young Widows as our weekly release spotlight. To read a full review of the album by Radio K volunteer Jamie White and download a free track from the album, head to RadioK.org. From Young Widows, this is Gift of Failure, right here on Radio K's Culture Q. Once again, that was Gift of Failure by Young Widows from their album Easy Pain on Radio K's Culture Q. You can check out the full review of the album as well as download a free track from RadioK.org. For many young actors inducted into theatre through middle school or high school programs, graduation introduces the need to find new avenues for their acting. To learn how a community theatre can fill this role, Parker Lemke visited a bustling rehearsal of the Fridley Community Theatre Group's latest musical.
The Broadway musical Kiss Me, Kate tells the story of a dysfunctional acting group putting on William Shakespeare's comedic play, The Taming of the Shrew. Its frequent conflict between characters on stage thankfully doesn't carry over to the real-life cast and crew rehearsing it in Fridley High School's auditorium.
It is so welcoming. I love these people. I can be gone for 3 years, which I was. I didn't do the musical last year or the year before that. And right after I came back, everyone was just hugging me like, oh my goodness, you're finally back. We missed you so much.
Aswin Almanzar is a senior at the University of St. Thomas majoring in business marketing. Having grown up in Columbia Heights, close to Fridley, she returned to take part in the community theater group's fifth season after getting hooked on the music for Kiss Me, Kate.
It's very jazzy and swingy and fun and sassy. And
she plays a member of the ensemble, the group of performers who dance and sing in the background on stage. Not playing one of the lead roles doesn't dim her enthusiasm.
When you go into community theater with people of different ages, of different backgrounds, and of different acting skills, it lets you grow in so many areas. Because when you're just smaller groups or everyone's your age, you might have a musical and you're just like, oh, well, we can only pick from this group and they're all about the same level. And I mean, yeah, this person's supposed to be played by an old person, but it's all high schoolers, so we're just gonna put some makeup on them. And then you get here and it's like, I can't play any of these roles. So I'm gonna have to do the best that I can in this role that I'm given because I have no other choice.
I wanted to speak with director Tom Larson, who directs theater at Fridley High School and for the community theater, about the role the group plays in educating actors. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to speak with him at the busy rehearsal.
Like, when's the next time you're going to have some downtime?
There probably isn't going to be any.
I was, however, able to reach him by phone later.
It is so important to have community theaters as an outlet. You know, who's ever involved, we hope that they learn something new that they didn't know. We're teaching them a couple new techniques on how they sing a particular song, or we're teaching them some new dance steps, or we're teaching them how to act in a way that maybe they haven't acted before. That's one of our goals, is we try to make, you know, it a learning experience so people walk away going, wow, not only did I have fun, but I never thought I would learn how to tap dance, or whatever the case may be.
These people include many high school and college-age students, who together make up about two-thirds of the Kiss Me, Kate production. Of course, the cast and crew encompasses volunteers of all ages as well.
I think our youngest cast member is 14, and the oldest, I am guessing, around 65.
Putting on a show with so many people of different ages has helped University of Minnesota student Tom Brumba gain a better understanding of what he enjoys about theater.
I didn't know in high school if I truly liked theater or if I liked the social group, the friends that I made in theater. So this, since I didn't have many friends going into this show, it made me realize that I actually truly like theater, the theater aspect of it.
He plays one of the major characters in Kiss Me, Kate, a Broadway hoofer and gambling addict named Bill Calhoun. He says the change in venue from high school theater to community theater has added prestige to his roles.
We get a lot of respect. I've gotten a lot more respect in this community theater that I got in high school because we're looked at as volunteers as opposed to being students and underlings. So it's been nice. It's been really nice.
Both Tom Brumba and Aswin Almanzar see themselves continuing their involvement in community theater, even if life takes them to different stages.
Actually, I might be moving out of state next year, so it's kind of frustrating because I've heard rumors of the next musical and everyone's excited and I really want to be part of it. And finding a group of people that you just kind of belong with and you can feel at home with, it can be kind of hard, and especially in a different state. So I'm kind of hoping that something will happen and I'll have to stay. But if I have to go somewhere else, I'll still look and I'll find a community theater somewhere.
And no matter what, the experience of sharing a performance with an audience remained the most rewarding part of her hobby.
When you're out there and you're dancing in front of people and people are laughing and they're crying or they're really dramatic along. How do I say this? It's really intense in the audience because you can tell something dramatic is going on. Then they're all kind of like, oh, shoot, what's going to happen next? And some of them might even be like, wow, I want to do this later on. Like, how can you do that? Or they'll come up to you and be like, that one dance move, how did you learn that? And you're like, blood and tears, blood and tears.
For Culture Q, I am Parker Lemke.
You've listened to Culture Q on Radio K, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m, bringing you all the stories from the Twin Cities that you won't hear anywhere else. Tonight you heard the voices of Katie Bolin, Parker Lemke, Aaron Bolton, and Matt Curtis. Our producers are Amy Freeman, Parker Lemke, and Katie Bolin. Our music reporter is Aaron Bolton. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and I am your host and managing editor, Matthew Curtis. You can find us on Radio K, PRX, and iTunes. You can join us on Facebook. Just search Culture Q. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m, and thank you for listening.
Hey, this is Bethany Browson.
I'm Tyler Lowenstein.
This is Tyler Walker, and then you're listening to Gopher Game Day.